चिन्तयन्तः
concentrating
mom
on
me
ye
those who
janah
persons
Vayupāsate
properly worship
Tesham
of them
Nityam
always
Abhiyuktānam
fixed in devotion
Yoga
requirements
Shemam
protection
Mahami
carry
Aham
Translation. That those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. Report by His Divine Grace, Nisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who is able, one who is unable, to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness, cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve consciousness by yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable conditioned life. So kshema, let's look at this word. Kshema means kshema, protection. Krishna gives protection to the devotees who have totally dedicated themselves to Him. Sometimes the example is given that when someone goes in the armed forces, the government, and they risk their life on behalf of the government, so the government takes care of them throughout their lives, and even their family members and so many things. They haven't, I think in most countries, a Veterans Association administration. They take care of all their necessities. Or even a ordinary employer, if someone works for him and works hard, then naturally he takes care of the necessities. He gives him a wage. The employer gives him a wage so that he can maintain himself. Why then will Krishna not take care of his devotee? If someone becomes fully dedicated as a servant of Krishna, then are we to expect that Krishna, being the Supreme Lord, is less of a honorable employer than an ordinary man or an ordinary government? No. One of Krishna's qualities is that he's very grateful. That's a good quality, isn't it? Everyone appreciates a grateful person. A grateful person is someone, you give him a little thing and he says, oh, thank you so much. And you're even embarrassed. You say, but it wasn't very much that I gave you. He said, no, this is really nice of you. It was so kind of you to go out of your way to get... And he appreciates whatever little thing someone does for him. Everyone loves such a person. On the other hand, the other type of person, you know that type. You work so hard. You do everything. You labor extensively. You go out of your way. You do everything. And you bring him this thing. And he says, oh, that.
I hate that thing. Why'd you do it like that? And you just become angry. This person's so ungrateful. I worked so hard to give him something, and what does he give me? He's not satisfied. He's ungrateful. So an ungrateful person is very disliked. And a grateful person is very much appreciated. Well, Krishna is the most grateful. Because Krishna, he said, there's a quotation in the Nectar Devotion, that when Draupadi simply said, "Hey Govinda," that was sufficient. Krishna said, "I'm so indebted now, I won't be able to pay it back." Just because she said, "Hey Govinda." "Hey Govinda" means, "Oh my Lord, Govinda." And the gopis, when the gopis came to Krishna and gave up everything, Krishna said, "There's no way that I can repay you for your service to me." How grateful he was. He said, "There's nothing I have." What did he have? He has everything. But still, he said, "There's nothing that I have that is worthy of your service to me." So Krishna, he appreciates the service of his devotees so much. Even a little service. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya priyachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami payatatma. If a devotee offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. And what happens when Krishna accepts it? Then the friendship is established firmly. Just like if you invite someone over to your home and he comes, and then you make a meal and you offer it and he accepts it, well then you're friends. That's it. How can you not be friends? He's eaten the food that you've prepared. He trusted you. And it's a loving exchange. Dadami pratigranati guyamakyati prachiti bhunkte bhojayate chaiva shadvidim pratilakshana. These are the relationships between friends, between people. I prepare food, I give you food, you accept. You give me food, I accept. It's not that I give you food and you accept. And then when you give me food, I say, no. Why not? No, I don't need food from you. That's not real friendship. It's both ways. And I reveal my mind to you and you reveal your mind to me. That's friendship. And giving gifts. I give you gifts and you give me gifts. This is friendship. This is the way to establish friendship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Give him gifts. Start off by giving him gifts. Whatever you've got. Prabhupada in the early days used to tell in San Francisco, he would tell the young people there, they were mostly hippies, he'd say, "Whenever you come to the temple, I will request you to please bring one flower or one fruit." So the hippies, they would do that. Every time they'd come, they'd bring a flower or fruit. They took it very seriously. They could appreciate this give and take, this reciprocal. And they did that. You'd have the whole altar full of fruits, flowers. Then he asked them, "Before you use anything new, you should offer it to Krishna." They'd come and bring their jeans to offer to Krishna. Bring different things. But it's simple, but it's very nice. It's in that way you establish relationship. You offer a gift to Krishna, and then he offers gifts to you. And you have to accept his gifts. Of course, he's already been giving so many gifts to us for such a long time. And we were maybe not aware of it. Maybe we weren't grateful. How about the gift of the sun? How about the gift of air? How about the gift of life? How about the gift of water, food? It's all coming from him. How about the gift of intelligence, remembrance, forgetfulness, friendship, love? All these things are gifts coming from Krishna. Or to speak of money. So we should appreciate it. "Thank you, Krishna. You've given me this nice thing. And now I want to give something to you. even though it belongs to him already, still we should offer it back to Krishna. Yat karoshi yat ashnasi yat jahosi dadasi yat yat tapasasi gonte tat kadushto barakaram. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. Now, when someone does this, when someone becomes, as Prabhupada's pointing out here in the purport, totally absorbed in Krishna, and his whole life, his whole day, 24 hours, is simply hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the Lord, everything he's doing is an offering to Krishna, well then Krishna just, he becomes purchased. You can't defeat Krishna by weapons or by force, but you can defeat him by love. And Krishna even says that. I'm defeated by love of my devotees. I'm purchased. Prabhupada wrote me a letter once. I was asking him about this festival called Pushpabhisheka Yatra. You know, it's on the calendar. Because we wanted to have a big festival, but we didn't know what it was. So it was in a good time of the year for us to have a big festival. So I wrote to Prabhupada, could you tell us what Pushpabhisheka Yatra is? And he wrote back and he said, yes. He said, Krishna is just a toy in the hands of the gopis. He said, so one day the gopis decided, today we shall decorate Krishna very nicely. So Pushpabhisheka Yatra is a festival for decorating Krishna with nice flowers and ornaments and clothes. And then he said, afterwards you can take the deity out after you do this and take him around the neighborhood so everyone can see how beautiful Krishna is. But the point was that he said that Krishna is just a toy in the hands of the gopis. In other words, whatever Krishna said, okay, Krishna, we're going to decorate you today. Krishna, okay. All right, now sit still, Krishna. We're going to decorate your hair. Krishna's just sitting there. All right, now we're going to put these clothes on, Krishna. Come on. All right. Now, here, wear this jewel. And he was just sitting there. He was just a toy in the hands of the gopis. Whatever they wanted to do with him. Why? Because they were toys in his hands. Because they were surrendered to him, therefore he was surrendered to them. This is the thick and thin relationship between Krishna and the devotees. It's pure love. Pure love means that the lover only is concerned with the well-being and the happiness of the beloved. Whereas in the material world, what we call love is that everyone's thinking that it's for my benefit. That's love. That's not love. That's the difference. We see some semblance of love in relationship between a mother and a child, for example, where the mother is so concerned about the child that she'd even risk her own life. So that's some idea of love. But with Krishna and the pure devotees, there's not even the slightest hesitation. For example, the gopis say, if we could please the Lord by suicide, we would be willing to give up thousands and millions of lives to please Krishna. But they knew that wouldn't please Krishna, so they didn't do it. But they were willing. There was no question. Even Lord Chaitanya said that to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana was contemplating suicide because he was feeling so humble and so wretched. He was thinking, I'm such a fallen devotee, and I'm just so, and besides that, my body's got all these oozing sores. You know, he had this eczema, but it was very all over his body. You know, the oozing sores, you know what I mean? Wet sores, I mean, open eczema. You know what eczema is? Or like boils. Imagine boils all over the body, wet boils all over the body. So he was, and what made it worse, that wasn't so bad. First of all, he was thinking, I'm a horrible devotee, I'm just a wretch, I'm despicable, I'm contaminating the whole earth, and I should just finish my, burn myself up or something. Then not only that, but I've got all these sores. But what makes it impossible is that Lord Chaitanya, every time he sees me, he comes up and forcibly embraces me, and all the wet, the oozing of my boils, it goes on his body. I can't stand it anymore. So I'm going to commit suicide. That's what he was thinking. But Lord Chaitanya understood his mind because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he knew. And he said, no, you can't do that. He said, if it was pleasing to Krishna to give up one's body, I would have given up thousands of bodies to please the Lord. That's not the way to please Krishna. So he convinced him not to do that. But this is the reciprocal relationship between the devotee and the Lord. The devotee is willing to sacrifice anything for Krishna, and Krishna is willing to sacrifice anything for his devotee. How can you get a relationship like that? It's very difficult. Although we're striving for that. We want to have relationships like that. And we get some glimpse. I remember I had one friend when we were young. We were very good friends. And it was, you could see there was some, we were so friendly that anytime I needed anything and I asked him, he would drop whatever he was doing and he would come to help. And whatever he needed, I would drop. But of course it was only for a short time, not forever. But there was some idea. We get some semblance of the beauty of that kind of loving relationship here in this material world. Or a boy and girl, they're attracted. And they think that they're, I'll love you till the 12th of never and things like that. And, I'll follow him wherever he may go. There isn't a mountain so high, a valley so low that can keep me, like nice sentiments we have in this material world. But it never works out like that. It doesn't. He goes, and I don't know where he went, so that's the end of that. Or I die, and then I go somewhere, and he doesn't know where I went. So the love in this material world, it's not perfect, it's not eternal. Whereas love between Krishna and the devotee, it's only tukya pratiyata, there's no motivations, there's nothing that can separate them. Even when Krishna left Vrindavan, and went to Mathura, the gopis, they were in just as much ecstasy as they were before, because they had Krishna in his bhava feature, in his ecstatic presence of love. So even on the spiritual platform, there's no separation as we know it on the material level. Now, as far as Krishna says here, that whatever they lack, I carry. And that's good. That's really good that Krishna does that, because we lack quite a bit, devotees. I remember one time, it wasn't too long ago, I was supposed to take an airplane flight. It was an international flight, and it was one of these, from Europe back to America, and it's one of these tickets that you buy that's very, very cheap, and there's no cancellations, no change, it's one of those. You can't miss. If you miss it, that's it. So I'm usually quite careful about these things, and normally I have all written down my date timer, and I check, and double check. Somehow or other, I got mixed up, and I thought the flight was 2 hours later than it was. So I was, and of course I came to the airport 2 hours early, because I like to come to the airport early to make sure I have plenty of time so there's no anxiety, no problem. So sure enough, I appeared just about 2 hours before the flight, the time I thought the flight was, and I turned up and the counter was closed, and it wasn't quite closed, but they were just about closed. There was only one person left there. So I went up and I said, "Yeah, I'm here. Catch the flight." And they say, "Well, the flight already left."
just left. And I looked at my tent, sure enough, of course, I had made an error. I was really distraught. You know, now what am I going to do? But somehow or other, Krishna arranged it that the devotee I was with and I and this lady we were discussing, somehow or other, she happened to... she didn't want to agree that she went to the supervisor and they all went, and somehow or other they made some arrangement for me to catch another flight without any penalty. So that was a clear example of Krishna's carrying what I lacked, because it was my mistake. It was a foolish mistake. All I had to do is any time during the last week or two, just look at the, you know, check again. No, I thought I had it in my mind. But Krishna carried it, because I was trying to serve him, but I just made an error. So that happens, you know, sometimes to us. Something comes up, we're trying to serve him the best we can, we make a mistake, we lack the intelligence, or we didn't think ahead, or we lack some money, or something's missing, and Krishna fulfills it. He carries what we lack, isn't it? Have you experienced that in your devotional life? Yes, Krishna does that. And we should be grateful when he does that. We should really, really thank him. Krishna, that was such a wonderful thing. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you do like that. Prabhupada said that about the temple in Mumbai? Well, not, it was Bombay before, it was Mumbai now. So actually, what Prabhupada did was quite unorthodox, in one sense. What he did was, he bought this land in Juhu. And the owner of the land was actually a cheater. And he had cheated several other persons who bought that same land. What happened was, they would buy the land, and he would put some stipulation in the agreement that if they didn't do such and such by such and such day, then the land would go back to him, and they would forfeit their payment. So he did that to a few others, and he was trying to do it to Prabhupada also. And he was very influential in the city. He was the former sheriff of the city, and he ran the newspaper, and he was very wealthy, and he knew everybody. So he just would do this time and time again. He thought this would be an easy one, you know, a religious group. So he started making arrangements that giving trouble, you couldn't get permit to build, because he knew all the people in the city, so he was, don't give them permission to build, don't give them this, don't give them... And then they get frustrated and they just leave. But Prabhupada, even though that was going on, this person was trying everything to give him difficulty, but Prabhupada brought big Radhakrishna deities, and he brought them on this land. And all the land was at that time was an empty field infested with rats, snakes, and everything else that you can imagine in an Indian field. So he brought the deities there and just made a little, like, kind of a, not, no building, because you couldn't build a building. It wasn't allowed. So just some kind of a shack or something, like a little enclosure. And the devotees were living there. And the deities were living there. In this situation. And it was really difficult. All the devotees were sick. They were getting all kinds of sickness and everything. And Prabhupada promised the deities, my dear Lord, if you kindly stay here, I'll build you a magnificent temple, I promise. So the deities stayed, but things got really tough. Then this man, he brought the police, and they started, the little shack that he had, they started disassembling it with torches, and taking the devotees, dragging the devotees off, and they were going to break the deity. They were going to break the deities. And they were, the last lady, the pujari, was there. Her name was Maitihili, something we know. So She was fighting, screaming, you know, fighting, no, no. And then at just the last minute, a friend of the temple had gone to one of the head commissioners and gotten a letter saying that they should stop this dismantling of the temple. So he came with that letter and they stopped just at that point, so-called the police. So anyway, they went through this whole thing, and then that wasn't the end of it. Then they had to build the temple, and there was fighting, and the man said, I will come and personally break the deity, and there was a whole thing. And finally, you know the story, that the temple was built, and, you know, the man, he was killed by Lord Shringadev, had a heart attack. And it was just this amazing saga. This went on for such a long time. It was such a story. And then at the end, Prabhupada even said, yes, it was a good fight. But then, he said, but we did that once, but we shouldn't make Krishna come to save us again like that. Shouldn't do that very often. He did it that one time because he considered that it was such an important, and actually it's proven to be such an important, that Mumbai center, that Jew center. Millions and millions of people have come to that center. I mean, it's the most popular place. And it's done, they distribute so many books, and there's so much Krishna consciousness is just issuing forth from there like a geyser. So Prabhupada knew how important that was, but he said we shouldn't force Krishna to rescue us by taking too many risks like that. So once in a while you may take a risk for Krishna and he may save you, but you shouldn't do it. Expect that Krishna is always going to do that for you. That's in the course of your devotional service, naturally, sometime you may fall short and Krishna will save you. But it doesn't mean you go out and distribute books on the motorway thinking, you know what the motorway is? What do they call it here? Freeway, what do you call it? What's it called?
Motorway, in Finnish, it's called
Motorway. Okay. So it doesn't mean you should go out and try to stop people on the motorway with books, thinking, well, Krishna will protect me. No, you shouldn't force Krishna to do things like that, because that's foolish. And that's not the way to distribute books while they're going at 60 miles an hour or 100 kilometers an hour. It's not, you see. But if in the course of your devotional service, if you lack something, Krishna will supply that. For example, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was fighting with his best ability. He wasn't taking it easy at all. He was fighting and fighting, and Krishna was ordering, shoot here, shoot here. And they were fighting and fighting, and then he was fighting against Karna. But Karna was a superior fighter to Arjuna. He was actually superior. Karna was his older brother. And Karna was a superior fighter, so he was fighting. And he shot this weapon, or he threw this weapon, that was going to devastate Arjuna. And there was nothing Arjuna could do. It was beyond Arjuna's ability. So Krishna just made the chariot sink down a little bit so the weapon went over his head. Krishna couldn't tolerate to see Arjuna killed. Another time, it was also on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna had made this promise. He was so angry with Jayadratha, because Jayadratha was the main person in the conspiracy to kill his son. Arjuna's son, Abhimanyu, was killed by a congregation of 5 or 6 Maharathis, which is unfair. It's not fair. 6 attacking one at the same time. And this Jayadratha had received the benediction that he would be able to hold back the whole Pandava army once. And this one time, he was able to hold back the whole Pandavas, the whole army. And this time he held them back, and Arjuna's son was killed mercilessly by all these Maharajas. So Arjuna was so angry at Jayadratha that he made a vow that I will kill Jayadratha tomorrow, otherwise I will enter fire. Give up my life. So that was really quite a vow, because Jayadratha heard about the vow, and Duryodhana heard, and what did they do? They arranged, the next day, the Kauravas arranged their army in a needle formation. And the needle formation means it goes for miles and miles and miles like a needle. Like a huge long needle. And where was Jayadratha? Way at the end of the needle. So in order to get to Jayadratha, you had to go through this miles and miles of all these warriors. They're all lined up like a needle. And he was at the eye of the needle, at the end. So that made it really difficult to get to him, because they were all protecting him. Because they knew, if we protect Jayadratha, then Arjuna will certainly, he'll fulfill his word, because Arjuna never tells lies. Whatever he says he'll do, he does. So they knew, if he doesn't kill Jayadratha, he'll enter into fire, that'll be the end of Arjuna, that's the end of the Pandavas. Because without Arjuna, they're lost. So they were all very happy about this vow of Arjuna's. And they were protecting themselves in this long needle formation. And the day was almost over. The end was, the sun was going down, going down, going down. And in India, the sun doesn't go down like here. It was literally only a few seconds remaining. And Arjuna was still not there. So Krishna arranged for the sun to go down. Somehow they covered the sun momentarily. So everyone thought that the sun had gone down. And they were all overjoyed. And they stopped their weapons, because they knew that Arjuna would never do anything against the rules of combat. He was a very fair fighter. So he would never do anything. So they all were in joy. Ah, the sun has gone down. Jayadratha is alive. Arjuna is going to go into the fire. Everything's great. And then suddenly, the sun came up again. Krishna arranged it, and Krishna said, "Now shoot." And he shot the arrow, and it cut off the head of Jayadratha. And then the sun went down. So, another example. Bhima was fighting against Jarasandha, and he couldn't win. And then Krishna, he took up a twig. And it's one of these twigs, you know, with two branches, two parts like that. And he took the branch and he pulled it in half. Bhima could understand. And so Bhima then threw him down to the ground, stepped on his one foot, and tore him apart, because he ripped all the way up. Perhaps Bhima had forgotten that. I don't know. It was known. His name was Jayadratha. Everyone knew that he was put together by... Jarasandha. Jarasandha means... Sandha means joined. So Jara... Joined by Jara. This was a kind of a... What was she? Like a witch? Some kind of a witch-like woman. And she found this baby in two parts. Two halves. One half had the right side, right leg, right arm, right, you know, everything. All the way up. Right eye, right nostril. And because the parents, when they gave birth to this child in two parts like this, they said, useless, just throw it away. So they threw it away in the forest. But this woman, Jara, she came to her. Let me see here. She put the whole thing together and it became alive. And so this child, he thanked her and everything. She raised him. She is like another. So after she raised him, he thanked her, and she said, all I ask is, for thanks. All I ask in repayment is that you take the name Jarasandha. That you were assembled, you were put together, joined by Jara, by me. That's all I ask. So, anyway, it was known that he had this peculiarity of his birth, but perhaps Bhima had, overlooked it or forgotten it, but Krishna reminded him. Tear him apart. Rip him. I don't know how he did it. Rip. He gave, but somehow or other, he made Bhima understand that he's supposed to rip him apart from this, and he did that. He got him down on the ground, stepped on his toe, and ripped him apart all the way. So Krishna, whatever we're lacking, he fulfills if the devotee is trying his best. But that's the point here, is that one has to worship Krishna with exclusive devotion. Ananya. No other object. Not that I worship Krishna sometimes, and I also worship someone else over here, and I have some other, this demigod that I take shelter of in certain times, and over here I have my other. No, just Krishna. If one does that, then Krishna says, I will carry what they lack and preserve what they have. And that's the special qualification if one wants to get this kind of protection and this kind of security. If you're looking for security, Krishna is willing to give it. Unlimited security, but you have to put all your trust in Him. You can't put trust in anything or anyone else. Putting trust in others is described in the Bhagavatam as Deha Patyakala Tradishu Atma Sanyeshu Satsupi. Putting our faith in fallible soldiers like the wife, the home, the husband, the children, the bank balance, the locks on the doors, the army, the police department. These are all fallible soldiers. They cannot protect us. So don't think that they're going to protect you. Because if you do, you'll be an illusion. And by putting your faith in those things, you're taking your faith away. You're not putting exclusive faith in Krishna. That doesn't mean, of course, that we can't lock the doors and we can do those things, but don't have complete faith in them. But complete faith has to be in Krishna. Rake Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rakeke. If Krishna wants to protect someone, no one can kill him. And if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can protect him. That's the ultimate explanation of how things work. This world. So a devotee knows that, therefore a devotee is always protected. Any questions?
Perhaps in the fourth part, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that if somebody is completely Krishna conscious, then Krishna will not let him fall down into material life.
Yes.
So does this mean that when we sometimes see devotees fall down, does it mean that they were not completely Krishna conscious?
That's exactly what it means. They had some devotion, there's no doubt. But not complete. Otherwise they wouldn't fall down. Otherwise, no matter what happened, they would always remain faithful to Krishna. They would never give up. And we see, in the case of the really, truly pure devotees, like Prahlad Maharaj, even though he was tested tremendously, he never fell down. Haridas Thakur, tested by the prostitute and by Maya Devi herself, personified, he didn't fall away. Whereas we might be tested by someone not as beautiful as Maya Devi herself, and we may fall down. Because it means we don't have the same pure devotion for Krishna.
Good. Continuing his question, it could be that this person is falling down temporarily, that his faith is there in Krishna, but he falls down temporarily for some time.
Yeah, that's what fall down means. It means temporarily because eventually we all go back, hopefully, to depression. But certainly a devotee will go back. So yes, temporarily. But the pure devotee doesn't even temporarily fall down. So that means if someone falls down, he's not yet completely perfect. But Krishna says, Apiche Sukarakaru, Puchite Mama Manyavak, Sadareva Samantavya, Samyavyasitoksa. Even if he does accidentally fall down, but if he again engages himself in devotional service, he's not to be criticized. He's not to be. Yeah, not to be criticized. Because he becomes again righteous by devotional service. So if someone accidentally falls down but then comes right back to devotional service, then it shouldn't be brought up. It shouldn't be brought up about his fall down. It should be overlooked. Okay, he didn't fall down, then we don't make a big thing of it. It's like Prabhupada. Sometimes devotees might, they had a tendency to make a big issue of Brahma's fall down. You know, Brahma had that time when he became attracted to his daughter, which certainly was a fall down, but it should be overemphasized because he gave up that mentality and he continued in pure devotional service. So one accidental fall down doesn't mean that he's useless. And Brahma is the head of our sampradaya. And we don't, there are some devotees who don't accept that that ever happened even. They don't even like to think about it. Because they can't accommodate that he could have fallen and still he can be a pure devotee. But Prabhupada and our Vaishnava, our Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they don't have a problem with that. He may have had some momentary fall down, but he reestablished himself in pure devotional service. He corrected. So therefore he's pure. And Krishna says, anyway, the same word. He says, I personally purify. I, within his heart, I personally purify him from all these sins. Someone can look that up, that verse. It's right after the verse, Apichet Sudaraja. It's the next verse after that. Read it again. So, read the translation.
He will become righteous and he'll achieve lasting peace. Gosana Kunti declare boldly that my devotee will never perish.
Which verse is that?
9:31.
Yeah, so it's coming up here. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. Yes. So, this is the point that Krishna personally purifies him. Personally within the heart. Yes. So that's the point, that the Lord, here it is, yeah. I want this part of the purport. Let me read this to you. It's really nice. Prabhupada says, the word Sadareva, he is saintly, are very emphatic. They are a warning to the non-devotees that because of an accidental fall down, a devotee should not be derided. He should still be considered saintly even if he has accidentally fallen down. And the word Mantavyaha is still more emphatic. If one does not follow this rule and derides a devotee for his accidental fall down, then he is disobeying the order of the Supreme Lord. The only qualification of a devotee is to be unflinchingly and exclusively engaged in devotional service. See the point there? That if he's fallen, but now he's engaging it, then that fall shouldn't be mentioned. If he's fallen and he's fallen, then that's a fall down. And he has to be derided for his fall down, because he hasn't reestablished himself in devotional service. Of course, he's appreciated for whatever service he's done. There's no loss. Whatever advancement he's made, nehabi kramanashyosti pratyavayana vijate svalpamapyasya dharmasya chayate mahatobaya. There's no loss or diminution. Whatever advancement he's made, that's permanently to his benefit, whatever service he's rendered. That will not be taken away. But temporarily, he'll be restricted from going further, from advancing further.
Maharaj, I really didn't get this to formulate an actual question, but can you say more about the point about the aspect of awe and reverence in our process? Or I mean, like ultimately we are meant to get rid of this in a perfect level. There is no awe and reverence, and we are friends of Krishna, but in a nearby level we should not take Krishna so cheaply. So in the beginning, should we have how much we should have this awe and reverence?
Well, yeah, we have to have complete awe and reverence for Krishna until Krishna bestows upon us some other transcendental rasa. Don't try to immaturely establish another relationship until you're completely purified. That will come as a gift from Krishna. It's not that you can artificially establish it. So awe and reverence is required. But it's not only awe and reverence, it's love too. I mean, there's love in, for example, in the Vaikuntha planets, there's awe and reverence, but there's also love. Those devotees who are living in Vaikuntha, it's not that they only have awe and reverence for the Lord, they also have great love. Or the friends of Krishna who are his subordinates, they had great love and awe and reverence for the Lord, both. So our awe and reverence isn't like the yogis' awe and reverence. It's not like that. It's awe and reverence mixed with love also. So that is a nice combination. Just like we come into the deity room and we pay our dandavats to Krishna, we pay our obeisances to Krishna out of awe and reverence because he's the Supreme Lord. Whereas the coward boys, they don't bow down, you know, they come up and say, hey, give them a slug, you know. But we're doing it out of love because we recognize he's the Supreme Master. And when the devotees, sometimes they were thinking, they would dress Krishna kind of like in Vrindavan or something like that. And Prabhupada wasn't so much in favor of that because we have to cultivate that mood that Krishna is, we're worshipping Krishna even in the deity form as Lakshmi Narayan. That's the deity worship is a mood of Lakshmi Narayan worship. And it should be done with very formal and rituals and everything, not casually. So, gradually, as we advance in devotional service, Krishna will reveal our constitutional position in rasa, and that will be that relationship will be manifest. But even then, the devotee, the highest devotee, he will not exhibit that publicly. That will be internal. He will not publicly boast for his personal relationship with Krishna. He'll still follow all the rules and regulations and behave like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He behaved like a sadhaka. He came to the temple every day, every morning. He didn't have to. He's already in love for Krishna. But still he did. He followed all the rules and regulations. Because a preacher has to act like a Madhyamadikari, not an Uttamadikari. So even if he's an Uttamadikari on the highest level, still he'll behave as though he's, for preaching work, he has to behave on the Madhyam level.
Mentioned
gratefulness. Everybody likes a person. I wanted to ask if this feeling, is it born of more goodness?
Feeling of gratefulness?
Yeah.
And even better, it's spiritual. It's a wonderful spiritual quality. But certainly people in the mode of goodness are grateful, and people in the mode of passion are not grateful, and the people in the mode of ignorance are just ungrateful. People in the mode of passion, they may act like they're grateful. But they're not really. They just have to act like that, because that way you won't, you know, you'll feel good. They're always, you know, calculating everything, what will be best for them. So I have to act like it. Thank you so much, that was wonderful. But they don't really mean it. They don't care about you, really. They just thank you so that you'll, you know, go on giving them. But a person with a mode of goodness, he really, genuinely is grateful. I mean, it's just, it's not a show. He's so grateful to you that he can't express it even sometimes. And that can't be done artificially either. Of course, still, even if we're not so grateful, we should try to become grateful. It doesn't mean artificially, but it means even if we don't appreciate enough, we should try to make some reciprocation of gratefulness. That's also part of our practicing devotional service. It's different than the person in the mode of passion who's not really trying to improve himself. Whereas a devotee, even though he lacks good qualities, he's trying to develop them. And he's acting on the platform of trying to be appreciative of another devotee's gift or something like that, or Krishna's gift. He may say, "My Lord, I'm sorry, I know I don't appreciate enough what you've given me, but whatever little bit of gratefulness I have, I'm offering that to you, and I hope that someday I'll become pure so I can feel more gratefulness." And that's good. Krishna appreciates that. That's sincere. That's not hypocritical.
Maharaj, can we be greedy for Krishna?
That's called lolium. It's the price that one has to pay to get Krishna is to be greedy. Yes, Prabhupada often said that a materialist is greedy for his own sense gratification, but a devotee is greedy for Krishna. Like, for example, when we see a very beautiful building or, you know, group of buildings, we may think, oh, this would be a wonderful temple, wonderful center. But it's like today, our president here, Antapavada Prabhu, said, "I saw a building, it would be ideal for a restaurant. If we get this, it'll be perfect." So that's greedy, right? I mean, it's greedy because he wants it. Oh, it'd be great if we should get this. The materialists are also greedy, but they're thinking greedy so we'll get money and we'll get sense gratification. But he's greedy, this will be so nice, we'll distribute so much prasadam, so many people will become Krishna conscious, Prabhupada will be pleased, Krishna will be pleased. It's a different type of greedy, spiritual greedy.
Related devotee, that I stress that in first canto, one should be really eager to do some special service. But is it like really like, is it not enough to think that in a general way that I want to serve Krishna whatever he arranges, or should we have some idea of what we want to do?
That's nice. Willingness to do whatever is needed for Krishna, that's very good. And a devotee may also have some, because we're not dead stones, everyone is an individual person. He'll have will have some desire how to serve Krishna in a particular way. It's inevitable. And that's, Krishna encourages that. Yes. Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. In other words, when one is enthusiastic, then he'll naturally be enthusiastic in all of his activities. Just like, let's say someone's service is to clean the floor, and he's very enthusiastic, and he thinks, oh, I want to clean it perfect. I want to get every speck of dirt off this floor for Krishna. So that's it. And he's desiring to, or a book distributor, sometimes they cry, please Krishna, please let them take the books, please. Right? They sometimes cry. Or a devotee, maybe he's an artist and he's painting for Krishna, he's trying so hard to paint nicely to please Krishna, he wants to paint a perfect painting. Oh, this is nice. Any other? Okay, thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.
Jai. Jai.
Jai Maharaj ki jai.